Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Today we'll be talking about the Snyder Cut. Of course, I'm my co-host, J.T. from Saskatoon.
Be prepared for pain.
Also with us is Red Ink.
I'm a big fan of justice.
And also here is Pablo Prano.
I bring the power of love.
Okay, so let's talk about this thing. The history of the Snyder Cut is Zack Snyder had unfettered control of the DC cinematic universe. You know, nothing to do with the fact that his wife, Deborah Snyder, was a high-ranking producer at Warner Brothers and shielded him. Nothing to do with that at all. Nothing to do with the fact that he was able to overrule Christopher Nolan on creative decisions. Nothing to do about, you know, his wife, Deborah. Nothing to do with that. But
he's actually friends with Christopher Nolan.
Which is weird, because Christopher Nolan said, don't snap Zod's fucking neck.
Well, that wasn't exactly also Deborah Snyder's decision. It was like Warner. Warner wanted this whole the dark, edgy, grim and gritty follow-up to The Dark Knight, because that sold. And apparently Hollywood never understands what is that sells or not. So they all had this whole... Well, that's when the New 52 happened. That's when they went, everyone's Batman now, remember? So, you know, they just had to do that, which is also a detriment to what Snyder could have done with Man of Steel. When I heard that Snyder was going to direct Man of Steel, I was like, oh, this guy does great visuals with red capes and superheroes. I want to see what this guy does. And we ended up with a shaky cam hell, which is Man of Steel. Instead of getting to see the most amazing visuals we could have gotten from a Superman movie up to that point, we didn't, because they were trying to ape on Nolan. And it wasn't exactly Nolan's strength when it came to directing the action sequences.
They're trying to ape on Nolan, but the other thing is, they turned Superman into a fucking monster. One of the most compassionate fucking beings ever. Somebody who actually goes out of his way to help people, to make sure people don't get hurt while he's doing his job, just smashes fucking Metropolis like it's a toy, kills thousands of people.
Superman does more life-saving and more Superman stuff before he gets the suit on. When he's wandering around the world with the same beard as Bruce Wayne had in the Dark Knight trilogy, he is actually helping people out. Except for one truck driver.
That pissed me off so much.
But the thing is, after he does that, it's... Well, the honest trailers have made their point very clear there. Watch how he honors both his Robin Hood fathers by using his powers and not saving anyone.
Red put it best that it's impossible to top Richard Donner. You know, the Marlon Brando speech at the beginning, you know, they're great people, Kal-El, if they choose to be. It's inspiring. It's biblical. It's amazing. It's full of ethos. It's in pathos. It's great.
They sold us a movie on that speech. Remember, the first trailer was the Jor-El monologue. Well, he walked out and flied out into the sun. It was like, oh man, this is going to be awesome. And
Russell Crowe is an amazing actor. Let me just get ahead of this. Russell Crowe is an amazing actor, but he doesn't make a good Jor-El.
He does to make Jor-El the action scientist from Krypton. Riding dinosaurs, kicking butts, swimming into legs.
You get my point. It's like I think Russell Crowe's a fantastic, amazing actor. It's just that that wasn't the role for him. And Paul, you said something very interesting to me, and I totally agree with you once I thought about it. You said that you understand why people were upset with the Whedon cut of Justice League, and that is, if you liked Man of Steel and BVS, which is totally Snyder's vision, and you watch this movie that's completely the opposite of Snyder's vision, you'd be like, hey, wait a minute, I like the Snyder. I understand why people would be upset. However...
Yeah, everyone's upset because no one got what they wanted. People who didn't like the Snyderverse didn't get a completely detached movie from that. And the guys that did like the Snyderverse didn't get the Snyderverse. So no one was happy.
That's what compromise is. Compromise, as I'm going to quote fucking Enterprise here. Compromise is when you have two parties making an agreement and nobody's happy. And I do have to say that I think that Whedon is getting a lot of hate for this, and I think a lot of it's unfounded.
He's getting a lot of hate from other things as well.
Okay, that stuff's justified. That hate's justified because he is a very predatory director with his younger female actresses.
Joss Whedon is the actual... I mean, I can't believe Zack Snyder is actually the good Justice League director here.
As a person.
I'm not saying about who's the better director in general. But then again, I do believe that Zack Snyder is good at his something, and I'm actually a fan of other movies he's done. Movies that are terrible in many aspects, but I do believe, for instance, I have Sucker Punch on DVD, and I believe that movie is like unfiltered and pure raw Snyder, and I love what it is for what it is. It's, you know, schlocky, it's silly, it's visual, it's a pretty onanist film.
Yeah.
Self-indulgent.
Well, look at the visuals in Sucker Punch, and I would like to see a live-action manga adaptation film by Zack Snyder because he has this grandiose aesthetic to his directing style that I think would work very well in something like that.
You know what's the perfect project for Zack Snyder? I was thinking about this all week. Frank Miller's Ronin.
No.
Think about it. It's visual. It's silent. It has that Frank Miller, philosophy behind it. This whole the guy, the sacrifice, the one man that makes a difference. This wasteland, this common folk don't get it. It's all epic and large and mutated.
But young and angry Frank Miller.
Ronan has one thing. Ronan has some subtlety in it, and Zack Snyder and subtlety are not having a talking relationship.
The Christian symbology that he uses, it's really subtle, isn't it?
Well, Zack Snyder, great examples of him lacking subtlety is, I'm going to go all the way back to Watchmen. Watchmen is 80% a faithful reproduction of the graphic novel, in the fact that Zack Snyder literally held the Dave Gibbons comic panels up, looked through his viewfinder, kind of saying, move a little bit more to the left, hold up the panel, okay, a little bit more to the left, okay, good, shoot. Because Zack Snyder's really fucking good at that, lining up the view panel to the comic pages. But the problem is there's lots of scenes in the original Watchmen that are subtle. When I say subtle, I don't mean like something's whispered or something's only slightly shown. I mean the messaging is subtle. Like, a great example of this is the birth of Rorschach in Watchmen. And I'm just going to get ahead of this. I'm not a big fan of Watchmen, but I understand that there's subtlety there that Alan Moore put in there. When Rorschach confronts the pedophile, chains him to the pipes. In the graphic novel, he throws down a hacksaw, and he looks confused at Rorschach. Rorschach then lights a match, sets the shack on fire, and says, "Bet you can't get halfway through." Walks out, and you just watch Rorschach outside watching the shed burn until it's to the ground into dust. In the movie, Rorschach just digs a cleaver into his head.
Well, here's the other thing that Zack Snyder has. Zack Snyder is a director that's entirely based on the rule of cool. And that's the biggest problem that Watchmen has. Again, I love the Watchmen movie by Snyder, but the thing is, he has this rule of cool thing up in front, and that messes with the message. Again, if you watch 300, you get to see how cool and awesome everything is, because that's basically what also Frank Miller wanted to say. It's like, look at how cool and awesome Spartans are. They're so awesome. And the thing is that Watchmen is like the polar opposite. It's like superheroes aren't awesome. It's all about this deconstruction, about all the problems that they have, all the silliness, all the stupid things and decisions that involve that, like also the small slight of fascism behind the idea of that sort of big scale superheroing. And Snyder, instead of, you know, going this deconstructive critical way with it, he goes with the rule of cool. And so it's not like, oh, Rorschach's so violent. It's like, it's so cool to be violent. It's not like, oh, these middle-aged people are having sexual crises and they're trying to, you know, work through this function again. Now it's like, they're so hot and cool. This is hallelujah. And again, it's always,
Cohen.
This is so cool. And Zack Snyder loves that and celebrates that. And the comic book went the other way. That's again why I think that he's a good match for young Frank Miller's stories, not necessarily for Alan Moore's stories, and much less for, you know, mainstream Superman and Batman stories.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brett. Go ahead, Brett. Well,
we're getting a little off topic.
Yes.
So we're here to talk about the two different movies.
Yes.
And we should see, let the audience at least know where we stand in this. Mm-hmm. Like, myself personally, I fucking hate both movies. I hate both the Whedon version and I hate the Snyder version. They both have a couple good little morsels there, but both movies are just awful, in my opinion.
Yeah, I remember when we first talked about the original, like the Whedon cut 4 years ago, and Ben and I both very much enjoyed it. And Red spent a great amount of time in that trying to convince us to seek psychiatric help.
Well, my feelings changed a little bit, but I still say that when I first saw the Whedon Justice League, I left the theater with a smile on my face. And I still think that that's a valid reaction to it.
And I think your eyes were taped open and you were fucking taped and suspended to your chair.
Did that clockwork oranged?
Okay. Pretty much.
But let me add to that. I pretty much walked in trying to headcanon the fuck out of this, and this is what I think the only way you could get any enjoyment out of the Whedon Justice League is you have to pretty much say Man of Steel and BVS didn't happen. A version of those events happened before this movie, because that's the only way you can reconcile the way these characters are closer to what they're meant to be. They're not all the way there, but they're closer than what they're meant to be.
I'll give it to the Whedon version. Everybody's like so sad. You have that fucking sad song at the beginning.
Yes.
Where Superman died and everybody's so sad and they're mourning him and shit, and they're laying flowers on the monument that has the list of people that he fucking killed just 2 months ago. And at least in the Snyderverse, there's nobody at that fucking memorial. Nobody gives a shit about Superman. Except some people, like some buildings have hanged up like a memorial just like to remember that he was around, I guess, kind of thing. But
something we had to deal with.
There's no giant fucking mourning that he's gone, because he fucking slaughtered a million people.
Yeah.
Here's two things about that. On one side, we had the whole mourning thing done in BBS. So the thing was that Snyder didn't feel like he had to, you know, tell more of that, because he clearly got everything out in that extra long funeral scene in the previous movie. So here we only had Lois, which made sense.
Too much of Lois, though.
In Snyder, in Joss Whedon's version, it's just like Ben said. This is where I stand on this. When I watched the Justice League version, the Joss Whedon version, I felt it like a mediocre late movie. As in, if this movie had came out the year before Avengers came out, it may have been like a impressive film. But now, it's too little too late. So it's like a 6 out of 10 to me. Because again, all the, you know, you could see the seams a lot.
Oh, yeah. It's, go ahead.
The Zack Snyder version, it's the movie as it was meant to be. It's the best version of what was filmed and edited and post-produced. And, you know, just the way that story was going to be told and also works as part of the Snyderverse. It was part of... It didn't try to retcon everything that happened before. It made sense with what you were telling, with the characterizations you had. The second that the Joss Whedon Justice League begins... And it's like, no, Superman was great. He was an awesome guy. He talked to kids, and he was happy, and he smiled. It's like, that never happened. No, it happened once. We have this cell phone footage to prove it. We have Bruce Wayne talking about how inspiring and hopeful he was. And I'm like, are you sure we were in the same movie?
Like I said,
yeah. Are we talking about the same guy here?
Yeah, that's what you have to do. That's what I totally admit that. I admit it. But
that's the thing, Ben. It's a movie that belongs to a parallel universe.
Yes.
Not this one. It starts using the Batman theme from Danny Elfman, the Superman theme from John Williams, and I'm like, those aren't their teams.
Go ahead, Red. Go ahead.
Honestly, it's like a child's toy where you have the circles, the squares, the triangles, and Joss Whedon is trying to fit a fucking triangle into a circle.
Yes.
Whereas Snyder has a circle and he puts it in the fucking circle.
Yes, that's it. I'm not saying it's a great movie and that's my favorite movie for the Justice League, but between the two Justice League movies that are out there, it's hard to say that this one is not better than the other. Yeah. It has a clear vision. It's well executed. I'm not saying it's something I agree with. I'm not saying it's something I root for, but as a filmmaker, it's the superior product. The Zack Snyder version is the superior product as a filmmaker. I'm not saying as a storyteller. I'm not saying as a comic book fan.
Okay.
I'm only saying it's a well-made whatever.
Because it's a well-made Zack Snyder film is what you're saying.
It's 4 hours long. That movie, if it had been edited down to 2 hours and a half, or at least 3 hours, and premiered in cinemas, in the theaters, no one would be making all the fuss that we ended up making. Joss Whedon wouldn't be in such a huge pinch and being hated so much. Zack Snyder wouldn't be regarded as the best director ever. It would just have been the third Zack Snyder movie. The least worst, in my opinion, actually. I think it's the one with the least body counts. And it would have just been another Zack Snyder movie. Now it's this cultural milestone of a culture war. It shouldn't have been that.
Agreed. But
an edited down version. We didn't need all the extras Whedon put. They were put there because someone asked them to. And the thing with watching both versions, it's like, there's a lot of fingerprints in there that shouldn't be there. They were pointless and expensive. It's like every small stupid joke costed millions out there. You get it? They mobilized people, actors, CGI mustaches to add 2 or 3 stupid jokes. I mean, I understand the Russian family that everyone hates on, but, you know, re-recording dialogue just to add 2 stupid jokes, like, I hear you talk to fish, that's just too much.
That's
Batman
saying,
oh yeah, something's bleeding, all right.
Yeah, okay.
That was the lowest point in that movie, was this washed down Ben Affleck shot like in the back of a park
or the back of a house, you know, just lying on the ground with the poorest lightning that he could have on top, the worst cinematography, saying the worst out-of-character lines ever. And that hurt way more than just watching another Zack Snyder film.
Okay. Red had something to say.
The movie was originally intended to be two films. It was supposed to be part one and part two. And you can actually tell this. This is not my original thought. This is coming from Red Letter Media when I watched their review about it. If you were in the middle of the book in the movie, like the exact halfway point, 2 hours, it would be the perfect ending to a movie. That's when they have that fucking, the fight with Steppenwolf and... They're in, they're trying to save, Cyborg's kid, father and all that and shit like that. And they lose. They all have to run away because they got their asses kicked and shit like that. And then they decide to bring Superman back. And that would be the perfect ending to, like, the first movie if there was two movies. That's the reason why it's 4 hours long, is because Zack Snyder originally wanted to do two movies.
Yeah, we heard about that.
But I do have to add one thing. The way Zack Snyder edited this film, though, is atrocious. Whedon did lots of cutting down, but because Whedon knows how to like cut a movie. At least he has a core competency to it. Just because you shot it doesn't mean you need it. And you know this better than anyone else, Pablo, because you're a filmmaker. Great example of this is the whole sequence about the Artemis's arrow. So you have the Amazons just got beat by Steppenwolf. Steppenwolf boom tubes out of there. And in the Whedon cut, you have Hippolyta saying, we need to light the signal. And her attendant, whatever her name is, says, but man wouldn't understand it. And she said, and all Hippolyta says is, she will. And then you have the next shot of her just shooting the damn arrow, saying, "Hear my Diana, hear my plea." You see the arrow hit, and then you get a cut shot to Diana doing the thing at the museum, and she sees the news report about the fire at the Temple of the Amazons, and she's just, and Diana just whispers invasion. So Diana knows what's happening. You got that done in three shots, three scenes done, less than 5 minutes. In the Zack Snyder film, you have Hippolyta say, we need to light the signal. It's like, okay. And then you have them, the Amazon starting the ceremony to shoot the arrow.
Yeah, there's a saying in cinema that's called kill your darlings.
Yes.
There's a lot of things that you're going to love that you're like, oh, I love this, but this isn't working for X or Y reason.
Yes. And
I believe that would have been the first casualty when an edited down version of this film would happen. And again, the thing is, I think it could have worked as a 3-hour film. It's just, of course, we're actually not even seeing the real Snyder Cut.
Because
there were a lot of rumors and lots of changes done after the original movie was shot. The epilogue and Martian Manhunter and...
CW Martian Manhunter looks better.
Yeah, it's so hard. It's way better used as well. There's this whole, how do you make a proper movie that... Back then, you needed to keep it down to 2.5 hours if you wanted to make a profit with enough showings, because that's the thing. The reason why they went and said it has to be 2 hours long was because they needed many showings in the day in order to get more tickets sold. If you put a 4-hour film, you're taking the slot of two or more movies, and that means half the ticket sales. Harvey Weinstein... separated the grindhouse films that Tarantino and Rodriguez did because they wanted to have this 4-hour double feature program like a grindhouse. And he went like, no, we need money. So we split the two films and release them separately. So we sell more tickets. So this movie as it is only exists in this 4-hour long format with everything that he ever shot in it. Because of HBO Max, And again, because he was like, oh, they really wanted to see everything I had in my mind. Let's show them everything we have. So, you know, and still, the we live in a society line was left out.
Thank fucking God. And the other thing I have to add is Sad Lois. Sad Lois came in like three, four times. There's 20 minutes of Sad Lois in this film. And, you know, Joss Whedon, like, got that down to, like, three shots in the opening and a five-minute weird Whedon dialogue shot in the middle.
I understand why Zack Snyder put that in there. Because it's about Superman, or Lois is grieving. And people don't handle grief the same as everyone else. Some people can get over it. They can move on. They can get on with their lives. Some people, it just fucking devastates them. And he lost his daughter when all this happened. That's how he stopped working on the first movie, on the first version. I kind of think the Lois thing was added later, and it was him kind of expressing, this is how I felt at the time. This is how Lois feels for losing her husband or her boyfriend, kind of thing. And he just wanted to express that.
All right, fair enough. But my whole point of this is there's lots of scenes that, you know, Snyder, like you said, Pablo, Snyder's in the mindset, if I shot it, I want to use it. It's not even like the major shots, like little incidental things, like when Barry Allen goes into his lair or whatever you want to call it, his warehouse. There's like four or five additional pickup shots in there of, you know, you see a downwards looking up shot of Barry Allen unlocking his padlock. You see a shot of him, you know, opening up the fuse box, pulling out a fuse, putting the fuse in, and then flicking the switch. We didn't just cuts right to the switch being flicked. And again, it's this, I don't know how much of this is to pad time or we didn't pull it out because it was running through time,
Whedon also had to make room for the branch jokes. Remember that?
Yes. Like, he had to make room for dumb jokes and to try to, I don't know why, but he had to establish that Barry Allen was autistic. And it makes no fucking sense why you do that.
Because to Joss Whedon, super speed means ADD. I just want to also say I am not a fan of Whedon-esque dialogue. I think my enjoyment of Whedon-esque dialogue died around Dr. Horrible. It's just
died in the 90s.
Well, my enjoyment of it died around Dr. Horrible. It's sarcastic. It's what else am I looking for?
It's jokey. He thinks quippy. Being funny means you make snarky remarks and one-liners. And Aquaman is the perfect example of that. I'm the big tough guy, and the only thing I ever say in the Whedon versions are one-liners and tough talk, and I'm Aquaman. Where in the Zack Snyder verse, he's actually a fucking human being and shows that he cares. He takes the time to talk to Diana and put their differences aside. He actually fucking points out that, hey, we're asking Cyborg to do so fucking much after losing his dad. And Flash asks him, I thought you didn't care. And he said, I never fucking said that. Like, it shows the difference, like.
There was a pretty surprising amount of humanity in this film.
I think
compared to the Whedon cut.
I disagree.
But remember that the grave digging and the small interactions they had among them?
That was one thing, and that was the scene I enjoyed, and I actually will give credit to that. I like that scene where Barry Allen looks at the gravestone and says, he was my hero. But it doesn't make sense in this movie universe, as you guys were saying, the Superman that has killed thousands of people reenacting the Saiyan saga in Metropolis, and he was my hero. Like, if it was any other Superman, that would have some pathos, and I like the way that he delivered it.
It wouldn't to me, because again, it's I believe it's perfectly clear, like, this is based on my real life experiences by now. When people do things that impact a society.
We live in society?
Whatever it was, there will be people that will go and say, yeah, this was the best thing that could be done. I stand behind this. And people that would go, this is the worst thing you could have done. I'm totally against it. So just having Flash say he was my hero is not something to me that would, you know, turn me off on that. The whole, you know, world saying, oh no, we lost our greatest hero, that would be off, which is what happens in the Joss Whedon version. But here it's just like one small opinion. I mean, he actually had to say he was my hero because no one really gives that for granted in this universe.
You talk about humanity. It's I talked about this, and I think Red put best is humanity is like accidental humanity in the Snyder Cut. Well, Whedon
in Snyder in general,
with Whedon, it feels like he's trying to do it like an outline. Like, here is the movie outline. I need to insert moments of humanity every 25 minutes so people can like it feels it feels formulaic. I will give you that. Because when I first watched the Whedon cut, when the movie first came out, I was annoyed with the Russian family. But after I saw the Snyder cut, I understood. It's like, oh, there is no human stakes, immediate human stakes in the fight against Steppenwolf. The Russian family was inserted to create that. It was inserted in interludes and certain spots to remind you it's there, to remind you that there's a human stake involved. Like I said, formulaic, absolutely, but I understand why it's there. It's there to insert humanity.
Yeah, we all understand why the Russian family was there. It's not that we like it. It's just that, oh, that's why that's there.
Yes, I totally agree. But it, you know, Joss Whedon has lots of issues. We talked about the Whedon-esque dialogue, which thankfully is sort of fizzled out and died with the DC movies. It's not going to do Whedon-esque dialogue everywhere. Thankfully, the people who did like Shazam and Aquaman have avoided that. Patty Jenkins is off in no man's land. I don't know what the fuck's going on with her. But like, I'm actually
kind of... Shazam was filled with fucking Whedon dialogue. I don't know what you're talking about.
Which one?
Shazam.
No, not really. I don't think that's Whedon dialogue.
Well, the thing is that Shazam works with that. It's an honest film. It's a silly film about a kid becoming a superhero. So that works in there with its own thing. The thing that thing that works against both Justice League versions is that they're sort of dishonest a bit. Snyder tries to act all grown up and edgy with basically what are child toys. And he's not especially good at it. Like, there were some very mature ideas in BBS that didn't pan out. Like the whole legal issues and the trial on Superman. That, if done by someone that had a more proper grip of what was trying to be said, would have been a convincing, interesting argument, not in Snyder's hands. What Snyder did to the DC Universe superheroes were like putting a baby into sunglasses and a leather jacket to make it look more badass. It has this thing that is like, it's sort of, again, you sort of see the seams there. You feel like, this isn't really how it would have gone if, you know, it's not what I expected out of that. I know some people want to feel like every superhero has to be dark and edgy because they wrap their identities around superheroes. So now comics aren't for kids. Look at all this rape here. So I sort of understand the strong reactions this is getting. But then Whedon is the polar opposite of that. He grabbed this edgy, dark, gritty material and turned it into a joke. So it's dishonest in this other way. It's like you're making jokes that aren't honest here. You're pushing it. You're pushing humor into something that's not humorous. And that's what doesn't work. While Shazam and Aquaman do honor their own characters in their own ways. Shazam works with that sort of dialogue, and Aquaman works with its lore. While, you know, the Snyder movies and the Whedon film here don't. That's all I have to say. Sorry. Sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's like I said, I hated the Snyder film so much. It is not enjoyable to watch. I watched it once. Like the second the credits were running, I went to HBO Max's profile, subscribe, click, done. And it just wasn't fun. It was dreary. It was dark. It was violent. Every time,
4 hours fucking long.
Any time that violence could have been cut around or tastefully handled, Snyder's like, no, you're gonna watch this impalement. You're gonna watch it close. We're gonna
oh my
hold
God.
On it. We're gonna hold on it. We're gonna let you see the blood splatters.
The Wonder Woman scene.
Oh God,
was so fucking over. Can the
I
top.
Be like you when I grow up? This muscular.
Yes, you can be a mass murderer too.
If I was that kid's father, I would have pulled her away. He's like, no, you're going to a convent right fucking now. Now, the thing, but the thing that I liked about the Snyder cut versus the Whedon cut, now, there is some very Whedon-y dialogue in his movie, but some of the jokes and some of the dialogue I think would have played just as well in the Snyder cut. Good example for me is like, so how did you get the house back? I bought the bank. Really? The whole bank? It's like a reflex with me at this point. I would have kept that whole thing in there and then have the thank you. But the thing I like the most about the Snyder cut is because Snyder is a visual director, we get visual representation of some stuff that was barely even talked about or at least suggested in the Whedon cut. Like, when we see the death at the beginning of the film and he gives out that death cry, you see that.
Oh my God.
Thank you for letting me finish my thought before you start telling me how you feel. Well, I think the
death cry.
Just JT hasn't talked all night. Just let him say his piece.
Okay, go.
Thank you. I like the fact that they had a visual representation in this idea that, you know, Superman's dead and this is the last thing they needed, the domino that needed to fall before, you know, Steppenwolf came back. And also the threat of Steppenwolf, I didn't feel threatened by Steppenwolf in the Whedon cut. It's this big armored guy with a wrinkly face who's totally not Thanos because that's a bad guy. We get this, again, the redesign, you know, the more alien-looking Steppenwolf, definitely more of a threat, but I still didn't feel threatened by him. But we see that he is a threat. Like, when Hippolyta takes the mother box and GTFOs from that bunker, and in the Whedon cut, we got these door closed. All those Amazons are fine. They'll crawl out through that hole in the roof. No, that whole thing gets sucked down into the 10th level of hell because that's how you build a trap. And then he Hulk leaps out of the water. The best thing about the Snyderverse is you get a more profound sense of the threat that is represented by Steppenwolf. And overall, it's a better movie. It doesn't make it the best movie. The other thing that I liked in this one, Barry is not, like you said, Ben, he's not autistic in this movie. I like Barry in every scene in this movie. I still would have cut the Iris scene because that served no purpose whatsoever. That's 5 minutes of our lives we're never getting back. And, you know, getting rid of the stuff at the prison with the guy that was being rude to him in the line, that they kept that core stuff with. Was it Billy Crudup, the actor, like Dr. Manhattan? Zach's like, hey, Billy, you want to be in my movie? He's like, sure, why not? You know, I like that scene. But what I would like to ask that. What was the point of the hot dog scene? Like, how did that move anything forward?
It didn't really move anything forward, but it was a better introduction to Barry Allen than the Whedon fucking version. I'm sorry, but it was just like, it's like Pablo said, Zack Snyder likes to follow the rule of cool, and he was just trying to do something fucking cool to introduce Barry.
Yeah. I mean, overall, I almost broke my brain, like, trying to, okay, this is what they did in the Whedon cut versus what Zack Snyder is doing here, especially in that final fight. Now, we definitely get more with Apocalypse and with this very basic-looking Desaad, and then we get, you know, the big bad Booty Daddy and Darkseid. But the whole fight in the cooling tower at the end there really demonstrated, I think, better than Whedon had even attempted to demonstrate Barry's power. Because, I mean, they have him running around the city like a cyclotron for 5 minutes to build up this speed to give Cyborg this boost. And then it literally, he runs into the Speed Force. Like, that's had to be what it was. Because, you know, the Unity happens, and then Barry runs back through time and resets time to charge Cyborg, and they save the day. Now, something Ben in Red had talked about in the chat, you know, a few days ago, is like, too much slow-mo.
Yes.
The only slow-mo I really liked in this movie, and it's really the one used, was in that final fight where these are more violent heroes, finger quotes. So I get, and it's Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman, even in like the George Perez run back in the 80s, like she would still put foot to ass when she had to. So I get her slow-mo beheading Steppenwolf as he's kicked through the portal, and they stand there and look at Darkseid and like, what are you going to do now? You know, I get that, but aside from Flash in some scenes, it's way too much. They got rid of the Red Sky DC special in that final battle, which I know you're trying to suggest Crisis on some level.
How? I don't think that was what I was trying to do, the Red Sky. It's just, I think they're trying to put any sort of color on the screen, because in the Snyder Cut, it's just drab gray and
blue, but you get it a little bit better. Just, I mean, you, any time in the comics that a crisis type event shows up, you get red skies. That's what I took that to mean.
I disagree there, and I also have to add that that it just felt very CW Flash to have Flash run around to generate electricity to do a charge for this thing. It felt like season 3 CW Flash.
I wouldn't complain about that. I'm actually a fan.
Like the Red Sky and the Blue.
No, Fuss is talking about Cyborg.
We're getting there.
But the Red Sky and the Blue Sky, you guys don't understand why that exists, right? It's because that fucking thing that was covering the cooling tower, like the shield, in the Whedon version, it was red. And in the Snyder version, it was blue. That's the reason why the different colors. That's all. There's nothing crisis or anything special about it.
Now, the other thing I have to add is just how utterly violent the Superman part of this fight is. It's in the Snyder version, it's kind of horrific. He maims Steppenwolf. I know that he does use his heat vision in the Whedon cut. It's actually the same sequence where he punches him in the ground, but it's just way take too long and too violent in the Snyder cut, like everything else. And this is fucking Superman, and it feels wrong. And let's move on to Cyborg. Ray Fisher's not a bad actor, but he's not a great actor either. I feel like a lot of his public complaints is just sour grapes. because he's upset that people didn't gravitate towards his character, and he tries to turn it into a racial thing. It's, you know, you're trying to condense, like, all this story into two hours. That's what Whedon was trying to do, condense all the story into 2 hours. There's going to be casualties to it. And because the cyborg character didn't take off mainstream because of it, isn't because of Whedon. It, maybe the cyborg doesn't resonate with the audience. Like, it's not Whedon's fault.
Well, it's partially Whedon's fault.
I don't think so.
And a big part of Jim Lee and Dan Didio's fault, because the only reason Cyborg is in here is because of the New 52 version of the Justice League.
Absolutely this, true.
This whole Mother Box Cyborg thing, it's all from the New 52 Justice League. And the thing is that in the comics, he was the framing device. And this movie, he should have been the framing device somehow, but they chose not to. They chose to play him as any of the other characters, because, again, this was a bad choice in order to introduce, like, five characters all at the same time. The way that Cyborg is introduced and developed inside of the Snyder Cut fits organically with the Snyder Cut in the sense that it's like someone juggling flaming chainsaws.
I love how you have to say it fits organically, and then you have a giant ass asterisk next to it that says in a Snyder Cut.
Yeah. That's
the thing that, again, something that I might try to do someday, but I bet there will be way more capable people with way more free time than me in the internet. Someone will edit down the perfect Justice League movie out of both cuts. Someone will grab what works on the Whedon cut, and someone will grab what works in the Snyder cut, and cut down a 2 and 45 minutes long version of the Justice League movie with a proper color correction so that it doesn't stand out that much. And that will be a decent movie.
My gauntlet worked! Good movie. My gauntlet worked!
Yeah. The thing with Cyborg in both cuts, I liked how, like, what I think worked better was Cyborg in Whedon's Justice League in the respect of more or less his origin, because in the Snyder cut, he's cyborged up by the Mother Box, and was it Joe Morton? It's
Dyson.
What's his character's name from T2?
Dyson.
Dyson from T2. Like, he in the Snyder cut, he is very much the Silas Stone of the comics, and in the Whedon cut, he's this bumbling, stuttering, you know, dad just trying to love his son. Versus Cyborg in the Whedon cut, he becomes Cyborg and his body is constantly changing and upgrading. You see his, like, that scene where he does the hollow projection computer screen where he's just waving his hand back and forth and scanning through the internet. That to me made more sense, that this is how he figures out his powers, versus listening to a micro cassette recorder of his dad telling him you can hack through any server, you can fly, you can, like,
show and tell is what I call it. Yeah, that's Snyder's greatest weakness is show and tell.
Yeah. And then you have my biggest problem is I like the way Whedon ended that final shot with, you know, you hear the Lois narration and Clark walking down the alley does the shirt pull and he takes off. That is the best way to end that movie. That was a great ending. But I don't understand the significance other than, okay, now he's going to fly off and be a hero with Cyborg. Like, they spend so much time showing and expecting us to know why Cyborg learning to fly is necessary, because it really isn't. Either version, I liked Ray Fisher's acting as Cyborg.
Red, go.
Like, the big part is, one of the reasons why I could see Ray Fisher was so upset is a lot of his fucking scenes were cut out, and especially Cyborg's origin. But to me, watching the movie, it's almost like you took a chunk of a cyborg movie and shoved it into this fucking movie.
Turn it sideways.
Like, it's, yeah, like, it shouldn't be in this fucking movie. This is a Justice League movie, not the fucking cyborg movie.
Yeah, again, and that's left over from the New 52 Justice League, but it's just like you say, it's like a big chunk of a cyborg movie put in here. It shouldn't be there. Someone put it there, and now we have to deal with it.
Yeah.
When Whedon took it out, it's more than understandable that he got pissed.
But I mean, let me preface this with you know, when Joss Whedon made Avengers, he didn't add a long and complex origin scene for Hawkeye or Black Widow. They were just there, and people loved those characters because they resonated with people. It's like, you know, you don't need to have like a big elaborate origin scene for a character to make people love them. And the other thing
we're having their movies 10 years later.
Absolutely, 110% correct. And I just also have to add with Ray Fisher Cyborg, my favorite scene was actually in the Whedon cut where you have Cyborg sulking around in the apartment wearing his hoodie, the hood over his head, and his dad's talking to him saying, you know, you should go out, you should try something, and Cyborg says to his dad, aren't you afraid that they're going to see your monster? And his dad says, you're not a monster, Victor. And he turns and his face is lit up and he says, funny, you thought I was talking about me. And there's some good acting there. There's some good atmosphere there, and it really highlighted the resentment between Cyborg and his dad. And it was a good scene. You didn't need to do a whole lot else. And the other thing I have to add is, you know, is Vic Stone is dead in the Snyder Cut. He is dead. He is a corpse. He is a torso, and only a torso before the fucking mother box went all Hellraiser on him. And while in the Whedon cut, he is really, really, really badly hurt, to steal a line from Will Ferrell. He has prosthetics on him that are like Lieutenant Dan, you got legs kind of legs and shit. When the mother box got to him, but either could work, neither here nor there. But I'm just saying that I think that one scene in the apartment, and I like, and Red pointed this out to me too. In the Whedon cut, Cyborg, before he revealed himself, you know, going to the tunnel, he had his hood over his head. He was ashamed. He was trying to hide who he is. Well, in the Snyder Cut, he walks around openly with the hood down. I think there was a lot more about coming to terms with yourself in the Whedon cut. And yes, it's subtle. Yes, it's not out there, but it's there.
Yeah. Another thing with Cyborg in the Whedon cut that I think was better than the Snyder Cut was, you know that he's hidden the mother box or the change engine, which I didn't mind that little name, because why would Silas know that it's called a mother box?
Yes.
But you know that Victor has hidden it and he doesn't trust his dad. So when he takes off after the fight with Steppenwolf in the underground and he comes back with it, he's like, no, because I got it. That makes a hell of a lot more sense than it's buried in the back of his closet underneath his high school sports trophies.
Yeah.
Zach, I love almost all your movies, man. That is like that one leap in logic that I was like, nah, I'm just going to shove in the back of the closet underneath this dirty laundry. They'll never find it here.
I like the fact that it's a secret. I don't know if they outright said it, but I think, no, actually they did outright say it in the Whedon cut, is where his dad's asking him, you know, if we had this thing, we could do more stuff on it. And Cyborg just says, no, it's safe where it is. And the implication is he saw what it did to himself. So he's like, I got to hide this thing from scientists. They're just going to keep fucking with this thing. And I like that implication. We didn't need to see him digging it down somewhere. We just know it's safe because he hit it.
Although I wouldn't have mind seeing him dig it up from his own grave before going back to the rest of the league, because
we already had one grave digging scene. We don't need to.
No, that was before the grave digging scene, though.
I'm just saying we need one. We don't need two. I just overall, like I said, I feel like the message with Snyder is edgy, cool. You know, superheroes using powers, maiming people, rah rah rah. Message Whedon was trying to do is hope, humanity, love. I'm not saying he succeeded. I'm just saying that's what the message was. They're two very different directors with two very different messages. I think Whedon has an understanding of who Superman, Wonder Woman, etc. are. And because of that, he tried to deliver to what the fans of those characters would want. Snyder wanted to deliver to what fans of his movies want. So this is always going to be a divide.
Yeah.
Now, sorry, you go, Ben.
No, you please go ahead.
Okay. Pablo, the one thing that I would have taken part, like, because as you spoke, as we spoke about, someday somebody's going to fan edit these movies together and try and come out with something better. If I were to do something like that, I would take the scene where Diana is telling Bruce about the first time that Steppenwolf came to Earth and intercut that with some of the scenes of Diana Prince Tomb Raider from where she... Ben, just let me finish. Just calm blue ocean. Like, not see her, like, you know, sneak past the cops and take the arrow and all that, but, you know, have her, you know, land in there with the torch. She puts the arrow in the door that little bit, and she's walking around the rooms and have that fade, you know, cut that into the recollection. We see that battle. I mean, something like that, because I get what, you know, trying to tell us about, you know, how long this threat has been looming in the Snyder Cut, but you intercut that with the story, like, bedtime story version that Diana is telling Bruce in the Whedon cut. Like, there are strengths and flaws in both films. And not that Whedon's dialogue is so much better than Snyder's, and not that Snyder's visuals are so much better than what Whedon did. It's there is a third film out there somewhere, but that's, I liked what he did. Like, of all the dumb, excessive bloat in the Snyder Cut, because it's 4 hours long, goddamn, I appreciated what he was trying to tell us with that scene underneath the ruins.
But it's not needed. You know, it's easy enough to infer from the way that Diana looked at the flames and said invasion, whisper invasion to herself, that she was told this story. She knows this story because... How does the first Wonder Woman movie open again? Oh, yeah, that's right. Hippolyta tells Wonder Woman old stories of old wars and battles. It's like, of course she would know this. We don't need her going to the exposition cave to see it and then have her tell it to us again. It is unneeded. And let me also add, it's a fucking waste to have fucking Darkseid himself personally show up and get his ass whooped in the flashback.
Well, I would have kept the Steppenwolf flashback. I'm just saying to, as she's telling Bruce the story, have some shots of her spelunking, was all.
But why? She knows this story. It was a bedtime story.
Again, it's a visual representation of what she's telling Bruce, Ben. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, it's also a cool visual.
Yeah, again, but you have to get rid of your darlings.
We just need a good fan edit. Something that keeps all the coolness of Snyder and the narrative structure and humanity of the Whedon cut, and that's it. Again, yeah. It's Whedon overdid it. He didn't have to. Maybe he was asked to. He overcompensated. That overcompensation is what ended up with the whole Snyder cut thing. It wasn't needed to go that far.
I don't but think.
That's the way both did. Both went out. Yeah. You guys get my point.
I don't think it's entirely just because it's people see it as the overcorrection, because it is an overcorrection. It is. I think it's because people have this thing where it's once they hear something exists that they can't get, they want to get it. Case in point, there are, Pablo, you of course know about the botched Disney movie Kingdom of the Sun, right?
Yeah, that ended up being a very, 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 very reworked version of Emperor's New Groove.
Yes, and was it Sting? Red, was it Sting?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Sting and his wife were like shooting a mini documentary about making this movie when Sting was doing the soundtrack for it, and people saw this and they're like, "Holy God, we want to see all this on unaired animation footage. We need to see this." And it's gone.
It's not gone. This is how all Disney movies are made. They go through many fucking revisions. Like every single one of them goes through that.
There's a 2D version of Frozen, basically, that never got into animation.
Yeah. There's also Aladdin was a completely different fucking movie till they did a more family-friendly version of it, because it was actually going to be dark and fucking dark and scary. Then they changed it into a more family-friendly version, well, especially when they got Robin Williams on board.
The Pixar version of working movies, testing stuff up and changing things up, is sort of one of the things that doomed John Carter, because they you know, screen tested it, made changes, and with an animation movie, there's some stuff you can do with that, but with a live action movie and the cost that it has, it's so difficult. And again, there's a whole Toy Story 2 movie that got dropped off,
deleted,
and then remade from scratch.
Are you talking about the Studio 7 one, or are you talking about the one that they accidentally deleted on the rendering engine?
I'm talking mostly of the Studio 7 one.
Okay.
But actually, if we count that, there's almost three. There's 2.5. versions of Toy Story 2. Well, there's a 1.5 movie missing. That's it.
Yes, but like I said, it's what they call the cat in the closed door syndrome with people on the internet. Once they hear there's something that's out there that they can't get, they want it, no matter how bad it might be. Kingdom of the Sun's a great example, because once Sting's wife released that documentary, everyone's like, holy shit, we want to see this. Disney,
we got a way darker, more in-topic thing of this. The death of Superman Lives.
Oh, my God, you're right. Oh, there's one more. There's one more that happened in, like, the last 2 years.
Justice League Immortal.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about the Lord?
The Miller.
Perfect. Yeah, Lord Miller. But what I'm talking about is this is the stupidest thing that ever happened. 2 years ago, actor and comedian Tom Wilson was on a podcast. And someone asked him, hey, how much Eric Stoltz footage is there? And Tom Wilson said, oh, I think he was shooting for us for like 2 months. I think they got like 90% of the movie with him. And Tom Wilson doesn't know. Okay, Tom Wilson doesn't know, first of all. He was guessing. But people on internet went nuts. They're like, we want to see the Stoltz cut.
There is no Stoltz cut. He's only filmed three fucking scenes. Like, he filmed the scene where he's holding the fucking camera and, what do you call it, Einstein goes back in time. He never filmed the entire sequence. That's the only fucking scene that he filmed. It's just Einstein going back in time.
There's also the one where he's in the diner in 1955. Yeah. But yeah, it's like two scenes.
The diner scene, and the third one is when he's back in time in 1955 and he meets Doc Brown, or Marty meets Doc Brown, and Doc Brown has a dumb fucking thing on his head. That's the only three scenes that he's ever filmed. And that's, what, less than 20% of the fucking movie.
You're right. But people heard Tom Wilson say, I think 90%, and they went nuts.
Well, people should,
let's get old-ass Eric fucking Stoltz to fucking refilm some scenes.
What I love is just, whenever Zemeckis talks about Eric Stoltz, he is super fucking diplomatic. Saying, oh, he's a great actor, he's just not doing the right kind of humor. When in actuality, he's like, this guy's awful. I can tell by the way he says it. He's just being diplomatic because this guy won an Oscar.
He's not being diplomatic. It's more like Eric Stoltz was our third or fourth choice. Our first choice was Michael J. Fox, but he had scheduling problems, and then he fixed those scheduling problems, and we went with him.
Yeah. Now, there's something Ben had mentioned in our Skype chat, listeners, that I just sat there nodding my head. I was in total agreement. There's a lot of what Ben and Red talked about that I was just like, yeah, you guys are right. I'm not going to be able to add anything to this conversation. Is Silas's death in the Snyder Cut unnecessary? God. And he had every opportunity to get out of that cube. There's really no good reason for him to kill himself like that.
He had to superheat the cube.
And he couldn't do that from outside of that
superheating box.
He had this thing in his hand that was a remote that controls things. A remote control, if you will.
Yeah. There's this thing that Snyder always has, which is the pointless sacrifice thing. He did it with Pa Kent in Man of Steel as well. Like, no. Oh,
don't even get us started
on
that.
Don't save me. This tornado has to take me away. If there are two things that Snyder always does, is slow motion, people looking at stuff contemplative, and then the pointless sacrifice. The end of Sucker Punch. No, I have to give myself in to distract them so you may live. One has to die. It's the only way. Superman is using the kryptonite spear to kill Doomsday when Diana could have used it, or, you know, use it as a spear and throw it. Or Batman could have used it. Anyone could have used it. But no, he had to die. It's the only way, Lois.
I just want to point out that in that fight, she wasn't exactly losing at that point either.
Yeah. But it's the only way. One has to die. Again, I like Snyder's visual style and commitment to whatever he does. I'm really not a fan of his philosophy of life, view of life itself.
Yeah, that's kind of a hard thing to take. I mean, I like Whedon's, like I said before, I liked a lot of Whedon's jokes in his version. And as much as I like, you know, I'm also a big fan of Joe. I don't care what anyone says. I fucking love that scene in the Whedon cut. And it's not any better, the line that he says when he arrives in the Snyder cut. But I did like it a lot more. Like, I thought in that moment, you know, they're trying to stop the mother boxes from synchronizing and ending all life on Earth. And he pops in, he takes that blow from Steppenwolf, and he's like,
oh my God,
not impressed. And he just does the little, I know you hate everything that brings me joy in life, so can we move on in the conversation? And he does the little blast of, you know, his super breath and shatters it, which, hey, it didn't end things for Steppenwolf versus the Whedon cut. It's like this huge phallic symbol for Steppenwolf, and this is the only way he's been able to get through all these years of being exiled, because he had, you know, the whacking stick, and as soon as that was shattered, he lost all confidence in himself. And
well, because they set it up in the
progress
first
report. Where are the fucking cubes?
Yes!
We need a progress report. Where are the fucking cubes?
Yeah, Dasan shows up and says, Dasan shows up and says, you didn't fill out the cover sheet of your TPS report.
There's something, again, involving this final fight. It's like in the Just version, when Superman shows up, everyone else is, you know, pointless there. he has to get busy and start saving people just to, you know, stretch the movie any longer.
Well,
in the Snyder version, you sort of feel like, oh yeah, we needed this and everyone else to kill this motherfucker for good.
What are you talking about? He knocks Steppenwolf down and he starts fucking tearing off body parts.
Yeah, but again, also, that's the other thing, that Steppenwolf does feel way more menacing because, one, his character model is way more imposing and aggressive. His armor is, like, trying to kill you by itself.
It's destroyer armor from
and
Thor.
And also, his acting goes along with someone that looks like a giant bull, while the Joss Whedon model, it's like this large, skinny man with a clay face. It's the opposite of imposing to me. It feels like
the original Steppenwolf was a guy that wore a green tunic
from God of War.
Yeah. But the original Steppenwolf in the comics was just a guy that wore a green tunic and a hunter's hat. Like,
yeah, which would have never been the final boss in any movie.
Honestly, I was far more familiar. I didn't get familiar with the green and yellow version of Steppenwolf with, like, the medieval garb until, like, Batman Brave and the Bold. My first version of Steppenwolf was from the Jack Kirby Superpowers comics in the 80s, where he had, like, this weird outer space leather daddy gimp suit number with spikes, and he had this electro axe with a power pack on his back. And even that, I was just like, okay, you needed an electro axe because... But yeah, like the alien version of Steppenwolf we got in the Snyder Cut, like I said before, he felt more imposing. He felt more of a threat versus, you know, not off-brand Thanos from the Whedon cut. Because like I said, he looked like he wouldn't be out of place in a cutscene from a God of War game.
Well, yeah. while we're talking about rip-off Thanos, Thanos is the rip-off,
off-brand Thanos.
Well, Thanos is the off-brand. Let's talk about, like, all the extra Darkseid scenes added nothing, in my opinion, in the Snyder Cut.
It did work in the same way that the Thanos scenes worked in the Avengers universe.
It was 2 seconds of him smiling.
It was a cool visual as well. I like the communication system they had with the wall melting into images. That was a creative, impressive thing to me. Unlike just someone sitting and that being it, I think it was a creative version. It's pointless now because we're not going there unless for some magical reason HBO Max decides to give like $50 million to Zack Snyder to shoot stuff in his garage every time of, you know, once a year. I think people would be down with that. And that would help the HBO Max subscriptions from the Snyder fans. Well, and I would love to see this alternate post-apocalyptic take. If they had started with that, I would have been okay. We just got, like, post-apocalyptic Batman before the apocalypse. That's why everything was, you know.
Yeah, I played like, Injustice. I didn't like it.
The post-apocalyptic scenes look so bad because Ben Affleck is like, I'm done being Batman. It's now fucking, what's his face is now Batman.
Shovel
I'm
face.
Not Batman anymore. I haven't worked out to be in Batman condition in fucking 2 fucking years. I've got a double chin. My arms are like fucking 10 inches thinner. But you're going to put me in the Batman suit where I talk to Joker and my fucking 3 chins are all hanging out of the Batman suit, and then you're gonna put me in a scene like with Martian Manhunter where I look like a fucking crackhead. I'm so skinny. It just looks fucking wrong.
And Ben Affleck sounded like he was fucking done in that Martian Manhunter scene. He wasn't acting. He wasn't emoting. The one thing that Red pointed out is Ben Affleck actually does go between Batman mode and Bruce Wayne mode in the Whedon cut.
He does in both. It's one of the subtleties of Ben Affleck. Ben Affleck isn't like a super good fucking actor, but he is a good actor. And when he speaks as Batman, he speaks softly. He speaks like Batman would.
Measured like a tones. Whisper,
a measured tone. And when he speaks as Bruce Wayne, he speaks like a normal person. And you see this when he's talking to Aquaman. Suddenly he'll go into the measured tone. Because that's Batman speaking. It's not fucking Bruce Wayne anymore.
I
want a Batfleck action figure. I like the way he looks. I like the way he fights. I like the way he acts. I just hate the crappy scripts that were given to him. If only someone would have said, hey, Joss Whedon, do you want to be the script doctor for Snyder and help rein in all this madness into a cohesive thing that sort of resembles the comics? That would have been like the best universe timeline ever.
The one thing I have to add is Danny Elfman's score is a lot better than the Tom Hulkenberg's score. It's night and day, because Tom Hulkenberg is actually a protege of Hans Zimmerman, and he uses lots of the Hans Zimmerman drums. Danny Elfman, he's harkened back to his own Batman theme, the John Williams Superman theme. He uses the Wonder Woman theme from the Wonder Woman movie, obviously. But there's something heroic about it. Again, it doesn't fit with the continuity of these movies. Absolutely doesn't.
It's not fucking earned at all.
You're right. But the score is so much fucking better there because the Tom Hulkenberg Borg or whatever the fuck his name is, it's all like dun, 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 and women wailing. God. Women the fucking thing is that wailing. It's
cohesive. You don't use the Superman theme in the moment you're trying to make a scary Superman. It's underwhelming, the score for the Snyder movies. I think the worst version of any score so far is BBS, when someone is angrily beating up a piano. That's the music main theme.
That's Hans Zimmerman. That
bothered me a lot. It didn't bother me as much in Justice League. I think Justice League is strange, underwhelming at times, but cohesive. The Joss Whedon score is a YouTube music video.
It's heroic. It's like I said, it doesn't fit with the tone of the trilogy. Absolutely correct. But it's heroic. It is Danny Elfman trying to at least insert some auditory nostalgia to make us be like, these are our heroes. Make us root for them.
It's also
there. Something is evoking. Another thing is copy paste.
It's Danny Elfman.
They also only use bits of the original score. It's like, that's what bugged the fuck out of me. If you're gonna use the music, use the fucking music. Not just hearing da na 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 and then something else. Like, the biggest thing that bugs me is when Superman shows up and he's like, I'm a big fan of justice, and then punches fucking
dun, da, da.
And then that's all you hear is dun da da, and that's it.
It's like I said, I think that it's a better score. I think the Danny Elfman score beats the Hulkenborg score easily because I'm just done with Zimmerman inspired music. I think that it had its place for a while, but it dates movies really weirdly now. And I think that Zimmerman's all about, as you put it, torturing pianos and drums.
Sorry, my cat just showed up. But yeah, no, what hurts me the most of the Justice League movies as a concept is that somewhere along the line, there would have been a perfect Justice League movie made. And none of these are. Well, I do believe we have the perfect Zack Snyder version of that film available now. We don't have the perfect Joss Whedon film version of this. We have the perfect Avengers Whedon film. We don't have the perfect Joss Whedon Justice League film, not by a long shot.
Joss Whedon had to work with what he had, Ben, and go ahead, Red.
True. I said this to Ben when we were watching the Whedon version the other day. If they threw out the fucking script and just made a completely original Justice League movie, it would have been way fucking better. Like, ignored Man of Steel, ignored Batman versus Superman, made a completely clean, new actors, new fucking movie, go. And just have them come together like in the animated series. One by one, they come together to fight this big threat, and then they form the Justice League at the end. That'd be much better than what we got.
That was Lord Miller's script, and then Warner Brothers hates it.
Be a lot better than fucking Joss Whedon grabbing a pile of shit, trying to shine it up nicely, make it look real fucking nice and cozy, but it's still a fucking pile of shit in the end. It's just nice and shiny.
Yeah. Okay. But what was the word you said once, referring to world's finest turd polishers?
Yeah. No, world's finest is always great. It was the Batman super the Superman Batman public enemies anime and movie is Bruce Timm actively trying to script doctor and fix the continuity errors that Jeff Loeb put in the comic book. Because it is. Jeff Loeb is kind of a retarded writer. He writes like an autistic kid with ADD. And so you had Bruce Timm being like, well, I have to explain how this happened. I have to explain where this came from. So, like, if you watch that animated movie, it's a lot of Bruce Timm fixing continuity. And it's kind of impressive in a weird way, but it's still a bad movie.
That's one of the things that Whedon does the best. He knows people will get nitpicky and finds the logical steps, connections, and backstories for whatever happens at certain points. It's not like filled with Deus Ex Machinas. You know where stuff came from, how people got from point A to point B. He has always had that clear and has executed that pretty well. Zack Snyder doesn't care about that.
Well, Zack Snyder... like I said a lot earlier, is the show and tell problem that Zack Snyder has. Joss Whedon introduces something once, and he trusts his audience to know that it happened. And while you have Zack Snyder, you know, shows and tells, then shows and tells again. I don't know how much of this was padding. Or how much of this was just Zack Snyder not having any trust in his audience and thinks his audience is idiots? Which I'm pointing out, by the way, they wanted this shit, so they are idiots.
I don't think Snyder needed any padding. He already had a lot of stuff to do with. He's just, you know, again, if you cut down all the slow motion scenes and put them at, you know, half the speed instead of five times the speed, you would get a way shorter movie.
You would, and if you cut out the extra exposition, I point to the Artemis's arrow sequence. That it's not, like, that could be a film class subject. Show both versions of that whole sequence. Show the Snyder version, show the Whedon version, and explain why Whedon's cuts were right.
Well, no. The worst
to the arrow sequence and only the arrow sequence.
Blade Runner, that has like seven different cuts.
Oh my god!
With a voiceover all over it. Again, the thing here is, you needed a level-headed producer in the mix. You needed someone that was like, "I like what you're doing, but we also need this. You know, this is cool, but this part doesn't work. We need to." Level this for this reason and that reason, and have like a nice conversation and not go all extreme and start yelling at each other, which is what I think happened in the behind the scenes of this movie. At one point, started yelling at each other, saying what they were passionate about, and no one got a successful resolution to this. I know that at least Zack Snyder's sort of done now with this, you know, like he got his way in the end at some point after lots of pain and hurt. I'm very happy that the Zack Snyder cut of this movie exists. I wish we didn't have to have it. I wish we didn't need to get to this extreme. I know there was like a nice, happy middle ground of this that would have avoided all the shitstorm that happened later.
Yeah. No, I said that when we first talked about this movie 4 years ago, that I don't believe, like, something to the effect of, if it's out there, I would like to see the Snyder cut. And like you, Pablo, I'm glad we got to see this. We got to see Zack's version finally, and I wish it hadn't taken the more toxic parts of the fandom for us to get something like this. That, you know, there were good-hearted people. It's like, yeah, let's release the Snyder Cut. I want to see what's that. And then you get the guys with, you know, the glass tape around their glasses. And I'm, actually, this isn't the right version we should be seeing. You know, and those are the guys. Now, I saw an article the other day talking about the ones that restore the Snyderverse. It was like, dear Christ, people, just let it fucking go. Like, there's a DC fan group on Facebook that a friend of mine shared this post of theirs just to, like, this is why we can't have nice things kind of example, that they said, we are no longer going to promote any manner of media that comes from Warner Brothers or DC films or TV. And somebody had entered, and so what are you going to do with the rest of your life when you're not, you know, playing with yourself or something? Like, it's those types of fans. I don't think that's why Zack made the effort to make the Snyder Cut a reality. He made it for the fans who, they want to see what his vision was, the ones that have enjoyed his work before. I don't think for a moment he was trying to please anybody other than his fans and himself, versus the parts of the fandom that are like, yeah, we did it, we made this happen, now give us what we want.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Like, a lot of people try to hijack this Snyder Cut movement. Zack Snyder had to put a stop to some of them.
Look, people say hijack the movement. This isn't a movement. This is someone engineering internet outrage at the fact that people are pissed off about studios controlling what media people get. It's millionaires tricking the masses into giving another millionaire a paycheck to go into into the editing booth.
See the people that were like, yeah, this is Snyder Cut. Yes, Snyder is the best. This is. And suddenly Snyder goes like, hey, guys, let's not go there. And then they go, you know what? Zack Snyder can keep his awful movie to himself, that fucking piece of shit. And it's like, dude, the movie didn't change at all before nor after he said that he didn't want something to happen. So either A, this, you weren't into this, or B, this wasn't about that at all.
It wasn't. This is the same reason why most internet, you know, you don't get vested in internet movements of any kind, because people take it too far. People take the banner up to mean 37 different things, and it's like Kick Vic all over again, where that started as, we don't like the fact that people are trying to punish this guy for unfounded rumors and rumors that were actually proven false, and then turned into this whole weird thing about trying to cancel and counter cancel people, and it's like, it's just anime voice actors. Get over it.
I wish we didn't have this many people destroying stuff.
To quote Ben Affleck himself, the internet has given everyone a voice, and they have chosen to use that voice to bitch about movies.
Great pull, and yes. Yeah. That's the thing. We also live in this new consumer-producer state of things, where everyone produces content, and most of the content people are producing is predicated on the content someone else made, not really their own content. And the thing is that there's more. I think Kevin Smith keeps saying it. There's two forces in this world, creation and destruction. Try to be creative because it's very easy to destroy.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, I love that the Snyder Cut exists. I'm not happy with the Whedon Cut, but hey, at least that was one way that movie got to exist as well. I like when people make stuff, and I like to watch stuff, and I like to talk with other people about stuff. I know there's stuff I don't like, but I better have something that exists that I don't like to talk about than to have nothing. The second we all become just people that shit on stuff and bitch about movies, and no one's making a movie because it's gonna get bitched about, that day we die.
Yeah. Now, very much so, Ben. One thing I want to ask you guys is, I've been here for a while now. Now, I still like the Whedon Cut for reasons, and I have enjoy the Snyder Cut for reasons, although I'm not in an all-fired hurry to pick this up if it ever comes out on physical media. But what I want to ask you guys, there are a plethora of Justice League animated films that DC has put out, because we've talked about how neither of these are indicative of a good Justice League movie. What's an animated Justice League movie that you guys would recommend?
Oh, that's easy. I
would recommend the original Justice League series, miniseries, first part episodes.
Secret Origin?
Yeah. I would have been fine with that.
I have a top three.
Mm-hmm.
My top three has to be New Frontier.
Oh, that's really good. Yes.
Crisis of Two Earths.
That's a good movie.
And Doom, Justice League Doom. Those are my three picks.
What was Doom? I can't remember.
Justice League Doom is a retelling
it's
of
the adaptation of the
Tower of Babel, which also did a fantastic job of introducing Cyborg.
That was good as well.
Did a fantastic way of introducing Cyborg onto the team, simply because Cyborg, kind of shows up, and he also, because he wasn't part of Batman's contingency plans, was able to help counteract them. The guy playing Cyborg was Bumper Robinson, I believe, and he did a great job. One of my favorite portrayals of Cyborg was actually that film. But again, it's those are my three picks of the best animated Superman films. I mean, Justice League films. Red, what are
those
yours?
Those are great animated Justice League films. Yeah, I would stand by that as well.
My picks are pretty much the same as yours.
Yeah. Me too. I mean, I did have at one point they had put out like an El Cheapo version of Secret Origins edited together as a movie on DVD. I had that years ago. I'd gotten rid of that. But yeah, the original miniseries, and I agree with you guys, the Doom I love, New Frontier, Crisis on Two Earths. The DC animated movie universe, they adapted War like the first one, and I enjoy that only because like they simplify an already pretty simple story from the comics, but really I just enjoy that for the animation designs, like the overall.
That was great. I love that Wonder Woman design.
Yeah, and the fact that she was voiced by Rosario Dawson.
Oh yeah, that too.
That was Michelle Monaga.
Was it?
No.
No, Justice League War, it was Michelle Monaga.
I'm looking it up right now, Ben.
Wonder Woman is later voiced by Rosario Dawson in the later films, but in Justice League War, it's Michelle Monaghan.
It's Michelle Monaghan. Ben's right. I can see the Internet Movie Database. It's Michelle Monaghan doing the voice in Justice League War.
Yeah, thank
you. You were right, Ben. But no, I mean, that movie, like I said, the design and the voice acting over the course of that whole movie series was great. But yeah, I think the best out of all the animated ones is Doom. I mean, you bring back most of the, if not all, the Justice League animated series voice actors. You get, oh God, what's his name that played Vandal Savage? He was the actor that played Martian Manhunter on Smallville.
Was it Phil Lamar?
No, it was not Phil
Lamar. Phil Morris, because he's named after the cigarette company.
Yeah, I also love the fact that his dad was on the original Mission Impossible TV show, and then he played that character's son when they rebooted that in the 80s. But yeah, no, Doom is, in my opinion, the best Justice League movie overall. Because they just have that bit at the end where Superman's like, well, what was your contingency if you ever go, you didn't have one for yourself? And he's like, I do have one. It's called the Justice League.
That was a great finishing line. I like that a lot. By the way, I just checked. Starting in Throne of Atlantis, that's when Rosario Dawson becomes Wonder Woman.
Yeah. I could have sworn she was there. But it's all good. I still love that scene in War where she's like, more ice cream for the both of us. And the guy at the ice cream cart's like just silently shitting himself. He's got that sword in his face.
Yeah, I have to admit that the Throne of Atlantis was, I thought it was one of the worst ones.
Same here, both in animation and storyline.
Yeah,
the story that it had, it killed anything of that would have been good from that storyline. And the animation, there were points that were like, hey, this is a me level of animation. I can't get to animate this scene. Then Warner Brothers is really, really tightened the budget up.
I don't disagree with any of that, but the best thing of that movie is Sam Witwer voicing Ocean Master, because he drank an entire 2 liter of orange-flavored camp juice and chews every inch of scenery, and it made the movie better for it.
But what I really disliked about that movie was they had to have Ocean Master like show that he's a serious threat. So you had the entire Justice League job to him, like some of the worst jobbing I've ever seen, ever. Superman jobs, you know, it's a fucking. The Billy Batson jobs, like they all fucking job.
Is that the movie where Hawkman like kills like 50 fucking people by going through a building and shit?
I don't think Hawkman was in there. I think Hawkman's first appearance in the DC anime movies was actually Death of Superman. And the most favorable thing I could say about the Death of Superman anime movie was Hawkman had a pretty nice design.
Well, they copy and pasted the design from Young Justice.
Not great design, but a pretty nice design. It's not a horrible Hawkman design. It's a nice thing to say about that movie, because the rest of the movie is like a stinking pile.
Okay, I'm just going to mark this down. The day that Ben said something nice about Hawkman.
I don't dislike Hawkman. Red dislikes Hawkman.
Well, you don't usually say nice things about Hawkman either, so...
Hawkman needs to be retired. He's from a fucking era where it was once cool to see a guy with wings fly down and kick some ass, but that's long fucking gone.
It'll never be over, Red. I will die on that hill.
Anyways,
One thing we didn't bring up talking about this, and it took me forever, and this is just a little nitpicky research for me. There's an actual name for the Green Lantern we see in that flashback battle sequence.
Okay, who was it? Because it wasn't any of the Green Lanterns I knew.
Well, he was really only... I just got to find it. I lost the link here. Oh, there we go. Yalen Gur, it's... I first came across this in the 90s when they had like Green Lantern Corps Quarterly, like the 80-page special edition would come out every 3 months. He was a Green Lantern assigned to 2814 that at one point the Guardians removed the yellow weakness, and this is before Geoff Johns and Parallax. And he went mad with power, so they put it back in, and then They couldn't rein him in. He collided with the Star Heart, which was like all the wild magic in the universe the Guardians had created. And he and the Star, this magic became Alan Scott's Green Lantern. So there was a reason for that. Because I remember seeing just after the Snyder Cut came out, people complaining, they still didn't name the Green Lantern.
Who cares?
I knew what that character's name was, so it was just a personal quest for me to find it, which was cool. But yeah, it's some people just can't be satisfied.
All right. Well, with that said, Snyder Cut, my opinion, is not a big improvement as a movie overall. If you are invested in Zack Snyder's vision and the Zack Snyder trilogy, the Snyder Cut does fit with it better. Thematically and visually and blah, 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 blah. If you want a hero with bright, colorful DC superheroes that embody hope and humanity and love and justice and light, then both movies are kind of terrible, but we did at least make an attempt to sort of bring that back. That's my take.
Did Steve Trevor tell you that?
Okay, Red, you go. What do you think?
What I think is both movies fucking suck. The Joss Whedon version is full of quippy fucking dumb jokes that go nowhere. They ruined Barry Allen. The Snyderverse is way too fucking long. It goes on forever. You can't watch it in the 4-hour span. You have to take breaks. I'm sorry. It does have some humanity that is needed, where Joss Whedon kind of like takes a fucking iron rod and tries to shove humanity up the asshole of the movie. And in my opinion, I'm sorry you don't like this, Ben, but the original Joss Whedon movie is like I originally said, a 4 out of fucking 10. The Snyder version is probably a 6 out of 10.
We're allowed to disagree about that.
Yeah.
I think it's the opposite, personally. But
yep. Both fucking suck balls.
Well, I like I said 4 years ago, I enjoyed the Joss Whedon version, you know, cringy Barry Allen dialogue and all. I even loved, you know, Ray Fisher giving a little cyborg booyah at the end of the film, because I don't care what anyone says. I fucking love it when cyborg says booyah.
That's racist.
No, it's not racist. Anyway, if I may continue.
Tell Ray Fisher that.
I like the Whedon version, despite its flaws. I like the Snyder Cut, despite its flaws. And yeah, don't be a hero and try and see this in one go. And unless you, like Red said, unless you have a burning desire to see his vision, or you're just a huge Zack Snyder fanboy, I wouldn't necessarily recommend watching the movie, because it's one of those things where, you know, unless you actually want to see it, don't force yourself to make that effort. And I'm pretty sure I gave the Whedon cut 7, and I'm giving the Snyder cut like a 6, and I would be at a 7, but there's too much bloat, there's too much fat, and that just really took the wind out of my sails for it. How about you, Pablo?
Well, again, like you, I also watched the Joss Whedon version in the cinemas, and I thought it was okay. To me, it would have been a 5 or 6 out of 10. The Zack Snyder version, to me, is the best version of that footage. It's a better rounded, but it's not also that much of a big improvement. So for me, if Whedon was a 5-6, to me Snyder is a 7-8. But then again, I would only recommend people watching the Snyder Cut version if they liked what they had seen before. If there was something they liked about Batman versus Superman and Man of Steel, you're going to get a lot more of that in this version. If you had never seen any of these movies and you just wanted to see one DCEU superhero film that had all the characters, then yes, I would recommend to watch the Joss Whedon version, because it's easier on the casual viewer, maybe. Mm-hmm. Again, I love the fact that we get to see the Snyder Cut. I know it's not for everyone. If I had seen this movie back in the day, I probably would be way less okay with it as I am now. But again, I believe there's a perfect version of these two movies edited together somewhere. I'm not gonna dedicate my time into it. So, but please, if someone does, do send me a link. I will be more than happy to watch it, as long as it's less than 3 hours.
All right. Well, that's our take on the Snyder Cut. It exists. You know, it's like that scene in BVS. Well, how do we deal with the world? Well, but he is here. It is here. We have to live with it. That's my take.
That's like crazy.
This is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Reading.
And Pablo Prine.
And we're saying good night.
So long.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, hallelujah.